So when we think about the armor of God, we're coming to the shoes of the readiness given by the gospel of peace. And one of the best feelings in the world, I love this feeling, is when you find a pair of shoes that perfectly fit your feet. Now, maybe you've never experienced this bliss, in which case I feel sorry for you. You need to be finding some more shoes. Because when you find a pair of shoes that just fits exactly the right way, and often what happens is it's only on one of the feet, because our feet are not identical. So you find that pair of shoes, and it just feels like you're walking on air. Really, ideally, it would feel like you don't have shoes on at all. That would be ideal, right? And I think all of us maybe have experienced that feeling when you find those perfect shoes. And of course, we understand that different activities require different footwear. I love to wear slippers. And if I could get away with it, I'd wear slippers here. But I can't, because we understand that different activities require different footwear. I'm definitely not wearing slippers to play basketball. I'm not doing that. We understand that whatever activity that we want to do, we need to have the appropriate footwear based on maybe the terrain that you might encounter. And really, hiking boots are really good if you're out in the woods or hiking on a trail. But even those are not going to be very good for basketball either, right? Because you want some mobility and some agility. Well, that's not going to work out very well. It's based on the movements that you'll be making. Thus, we tailor the footwear for the need. And choosing the right footwear can make all the difference in ability, efficiency, and comfort. We understand that. I think we all understand that to some degree if you've engaged in some different activities in your life. For soldiers, footwear could be the difference between life and death. Whether or not your footwear was going to hold up over the course of a battle, are you going to slip on the terrain? Are you going to slip perhaps even in the blood that is going around in these pitched battles? Are you going to be able to keep your footing? Because if you fall to the ground in a battle, you're dead. It just is what it is. If you can't stay on your feet, you're not going to survive in a pitched battle, especially at the time, right? Where, again, the armor that we're thinking about in Ephesians 6, notice that these are all close quarters. Combat. You've got the shield to block and you've got the sword to attack. It's very much in your face sort of action. And in any sort of fight like that, if you go to the ground, you're done for. So when we understand the footwear, the necessity of the footwear, Ephesians 6, 14 through 15, stand therefore having fastened on the belt of truth and having put on the breastplate of righteousness and as shoes for your feet, having put on the readiness given by the gospel of peace. This is the most unusual of the armor pieces. By far, the most unusual. The faith, truth, righteousness, salvation, these are all fairly standard religious things, right? We understand that. You mean, it just is what it is. Faith, we understand what faith is and salvation and righteousness. Contrast this with the shoes of readiness. This is the only one that has an extra attribute attached to it. Now, we might say shoes of the gospel, but that's not what Paul says, right? Paul does not say the shoes of the gospel, which would be equivalent perhaps to the shield of faith or to the sword of the Spirit or to the helmet of salvation, but he attaches a separate attribute to this armor piece. Shoes of readiness given by the gospel. Or as almost all the other major translations say, this is from the ESV because that's what I use. I've thought about switching, but now I've kind of got you all converted to the ESV, so it seems unfair to do that. The New American Standard, the King James, the NIV, most of them have, I think, preparation. Your version probably does if you're not using the ESV as well. The shoes of preparation, readiness. Unlike the other armor pieces, the helmet, the shield, the breastplate, etc., shoes are not primarily for protection. Because most people are not slashing at your feet, right? The protection aspect would be reserved for the torso and the shield, right? The shoes are not primarily for protection. They're for something else in both the armor pieces in general, armor pieces, and also the armor of God. This is a different sort of quality that he's talking about here. Rather, shoes are closely connected with readiness, preparation, and urgency in the history of God's people. Not just in Ephesians 6, but we're going to look at some passages. When God talks about shoes with his people, because he does several times, it's connected with this idea of urgency or readiness to do a thing. So let's look at a couple of passages. Exodus 12, 10 through 12. This is, of course, after the 10 plagues, or after the 9 plagues rather, he's gonna send the angel to kill all the firstborn in Egypt. So this is the institution of the Passover and all the different things that God is requiring of them to do so that the angel will pass over you. So Exodus 12:10, he's just got done telling them about the sacrifice and the meal that they're going to prepare. You shall let none of it, that is the meal, remain until the morning. Anything that remains until the morning you shall burn. In this manner you shall eat it, eat the meal of the Passover, with your belt fastened, your sandals on your feet, your staff in your hand. You shall eat it in haste. It is the Lord's Passover, for I will pass through all the land of Egypt that night. I will strike the firstborn in the land of Egypt, both man and beast, and on all the gods of Egypt I will execute judgments. I am the Lord. With your belt fastened, your sandals on your feet, your staff in your hand, eat it in haste. What is he saying here? What is God intending to convey with this command? Eat it like you are ready to go on a hike. Essentially, you're getting out of town. And that's exactly what's going to happen, right? Be ready to leave, because I'm going to break the will of Pharaoh. And as we do this, killing of all the firstborn. So you need to eat this meal like you're about to get out of town. Because you are about to get out of town. Be ready to go. And so the idea of the sandals on your feet, right? Of course, with the belt fastened and staff in your hand, it's like you all get ready to go and then you sit down and have a meal. As soon as you have the meal, you're getting out of the house. Not that they were going to leave that night, of course. There's an urgency, a manner of being prepared to act. Acts 12, 6 through 8. Now, when Herod was about to bring him out on that very night, Peter, of course, has been arrested. Peter was sleeping between two soldiers, bound with two chains, and sentries before the door were guarding the prison. And behold, an angel of the Lord stood next to him, and a light shone in the cell. He struck Peter on the side and woke him. This is kind of how I picture this. Peter's sort of laying down on the ground. And I kind of picture the angel just sort of kicking him in the side. Get up! Get up, Peter! That's kind of what he does, right? He strikes him in the side. Where am I? I've lost it now. He struck Peter on the side and woke him, saying, "Get up quickly." The chains fall off his hands. The angel said to him, "Dress yourself and put on your sandals." And he did so. And he said to him, "Wrap your cloak around you and follow me." The idea of putting on footwear, what? Put on your footwear because we're going. We're getting ready to go. I'm going to get you out of here, Peter. Get ready. This idea of readiness, again, tied up in this idea of shoes. The Bible uses footwear as an indication of impending movement and action. And we do too. Get your shoes on, Gideon. When do I tell him that? I tell him that when we're about to leave the house. We understand. That's what we do. When we get ready to go, we put on our shoes. I'm getting ready to play a basketball game. I might even change my shoes and put on some different shoes to be ready to do a particular kind of movement. Jesus connects this idea of shoes and feet to the concept of teaching or evangelizing several times. Mark 6, 7 through 11. He called the 12 and began to send them out 2 by 2, gave them authority over the unclean spirits, and he charged them to take nothing for their journey except a staff, no bread, no bag, no money in their belts, but to wear sandals and not to put on 2 tunics, light, ready to go from town to town. He said to them, "Whenever you enter a house, stay there till you depart from there. And if any place will not receive you and will not listen to you, then when you leave, shake off the dust that is on your feet as a testimony against them." Again, footwear. Sandals, only wear sandals and a tunic. That's basically it. A staff, sandals, 1 coat. And when you leave, shake the dust off your feet as a testimony against them. Why keep their sandals on? Because this is, again, rapid action, right? Rapid movement. You're going to go to a house, and then you're going to go to another house, and you're going to go to another town, and you're going to have to get out of there quickly. The idea of shaking the dust from their feet, what is that? I don't want to take anything from this person's house when I leave. They have not received the gospel. Even the dust that is accumulated on my footwear, I'm not going to take with me. I'm leaving everything there. I'm getting out of here. They have rejected the testimony. The Bible twice, and one is a quotation of the other, so it's kind of cheating. We could just say once. Twice the Bible connects the idea of good news with feet. Isaiah 52, 6 and 7, the original. "Therefore my people shall know my name, therefore in that day they shall know that it is I who speak, here I am. How beautiful upon the mountains are the feet of him who brings good news, who publishes peace, who brings good news of happiness, who publishes salvation, who says to Zion, your God reigns." Now, in the original passage in Isaiah, there's a lot of things going on. God's been pronouncing all sorts of judgments upon the people of Israel, judgments for the things that they had done wrong. And he is looking forward to, of course, in a lot of Isaiah, the Messiah, the idea of the one who would bring ultimate good news and peace. But this idea of how beautiful upon the mountains are the feet of him who brings good news. And this is quoted in Romans 10. Jim read 13 as well. How will they call on him in whom they have not believed? And how are they to believe in him of whom they have never heard? And how are they to hear unless someone is preaching? And how are they to preach unless they are sent, as it is written, how beautiful are the feet of those who preach the good news. Why feet? Because they had to go to the people, right? The feet are the thing that carried them into the possibility or the situation in which they would have preached this good news. And Paul himself, I don't think it's a coincidence, he quotes this passage, right? Paul himself had traipsed all over the Mediterranean on foot, mostly, not always, but mostly walking from place to place to place. The feet are beautiful because they are the ones who have, the feet are the things that have brought the good news to them. Now, of course, there was preaching, obviously, but he's running through this chain. It's a poetic thing. Ephesians 6:15, then, is translated in a couple different ways, in a couple different versions. Having shod your feet with the preparation of the gospel of peace. That's the King James and the New American Standard. And with your feet fitted with the readiness that comes from the gospel of peace. That's the NIV and the ESV. The one that's particularly interesting, and I don't know if you use a lot of translations in your Bible study, it might benefit you, to get two or three different translations so you can compare them in your personal study. This is a particularly interesting one, the New Revised Standard Version. As shoes for your feet, put on whatever will make you ready to proclaim the gospel of peace. It's an interesting translation choice. Not quite a translation, it's a little bit of a paraphrase, but I think there's something circular going on here. Is it the preparation given by the gospel? Or the preparation to proclaim the gospel? And I think it's probably both, really. The gospel of peace prepares you for action as a Christian. As you think about, we're thinking about this idea of preparation or readiness. If I'm about to do an activity, I put on the appropriate footwear. That's what we began with. If you're about to participate in the Christian activity, the footwear, the thing that you're going to put on your feet to prepare to do that, is the gospel of peace. Because the good news is about what? Isn't it about that newfound peace between us and God? He had talked about this previously in Ephesians. Ephesians 2, 11 through 16. Therefore, remember that at one time you Gentiles in the flesh called the uncircumcision by what is called the circumcision. That is, that this was an insult, right? The people, the Jews, had said, oh, they're just uncircumcised. They don't matter. Which is made in the flesh by hands. Remember that you are at one time separated from Christ, alienated from the commonwealth of Israel, strangers to the covenants of promise, having no hope and without God in the world. Talking about previously to Christ, right, in the Old Testament. This separation, this divide between not only God and the Gentiles, but between God's people and the Gentiles. But now in Christ Jesus, you who are far off have been brought near by the blood of Christ, for he himself is our peace. The opposite of conflict or strife or division, who has made us both one, who's us both? Well, Paul, he's talking as a Jew, right? He's a Jew. Talking about the Jews and the Gentiles, he has made us, me a Jew and you a Gentile, made us both one and has broken down in his flesh the dividing wall of hostility by abolishing the commandments expressed in ordinances that he might create in himself one new man in place of the two. So making peace. Because previously, right, they were at conflict with one another. You see it in the story in John chapter 4 with Jesus at the well with the Samaritan woman. And that Samaritan woman indicates that there's some conflict between the Jews and even the Samaritans, who were sort of hybrid. They were part Jew, part Gentile. How, if that was a conflict, then how much greater must the conflict have been between the Jews and the people who are not Jews at all, the Gentiles? So making peace that he might reconcile both to God in one body through the cross, thereby killing the hostility. This is a pretty good summation of the gospel. That there was conflict and there was division and there was separation, And now there is peace. There is cooperation. There is unity where once there was none. So when Paul says in the armor of God, having put on your feet the readiness given by the gospel of peace, that readiness comes because you have experienced that peace. The gospel is the thing that makes you ready, because now you understand the importance of the mission. You understand the importance of the battle. And the armor of God analogy, right, is obviously designed to evoke the imagery of battle, of conflict, of strife. But you understand that the battle is only temporary. You understand that it's not lasting, that really what we're trying to do is not kill the opponent. We're trying to make peace with the opponent. And with our armor, we're protecting ourselves as we do so. What does this good news prepare us for? What activity does the gospel of peace make us ready to participate in? Isn't it that activity of spreading the gospel to others? The activity of engaging in that newfound relationship with God? Therefore, the gospel is not just which prepares us, but also the thing we must be prepared to share. It is both. It is both the thing that prepares and the thing we must be prepared to do. To receive and proclaim the gospel. We must be ready to proclaim. The urging of the text as a whole, not just the shoes or the readiness, but the urging of the text as a whole in Ephesians 6 is that soldiers must be ready. Right? Why have the breastplate on? Why have the shield? Why have the sword? Why have the helmet? Why do we put those things on? Because we know that conflict can come at any time. There's a readiness, not just in the idea of the shoes, but a readiness in the whole armor. And while the other armor pieces are designed primarily to protect, to prevent damage from happening to me, the shoes are the thing that prepares me or readies me to go on the offensive, to go and proclaim, to do the active thing. The other armor pieces are passive, right? That I'm protected against something that somebody else is going to do to me. The shoes are the thing that tells us it's not just about being passive, it's not just about being ready to defend, but being ready to be on the offensive, to go wherever it is the commander wants us to go, right? With the appropriate footwear. Mount up, we're heading out. And in the rest of the Bible, when God talks about the footwear, right, it is with the idea that put your shoes on because we're about to go somewhere and do something, whatever it happens to be. In this case, it's about to proclaim the good news when the opportunity arises. And the question is, how many opportunities do we pass up because we aren't ready? We could think about this from the other armor pieces as well, right? If you haven't put on the helmet and the breastplate and the shield, then what are you not ready? You're not ready to withstand. You're not ready to defend against whatever it is the devil's going to throw at you. But if you haven't put on the readiness given by the gospel of peace, you're not ready to go on the offensive when there's an opportunity, to act when the opportunity presents itself. How many times do we have an opportunity to proclaim the gospel to somebody, but we aren't ready, and so that moment passes us by? Knowing, of course, that we don't know when we might get another moment. Maybe Jesus won't come back and maybe I'll have another opportunity, but maybe I'm never going to interact with that person in the same way again. Maybe I'm never going to be in that position with that particular individual. And I guess I could pray that somebody else comes along, but maybe somebody previously missed the opportunity and prayed that I would come along, that I would be the one to take advantage because somebody else missed the opportunity. How many times do we have a chance to share that gospel of peace, that message, right? That there is a division between you and God that you don't have to have. There's a separation between God and His creation that Christ has abolished. If you will take up that opportunity to be reconciled to God, isn't that what we do? We persuade others, be reconciled to God. How many times have you had an opportunity to do that because you were not ready? You missed it. And who knows whether you might get one again. Our prayer, of course, is always that we have more opportunities, but we are not guaranteed that opportunity. the urging, the thing that Paul is trying to urge the Ephesians to do, is be ready at any moment to share the gospel. Are you ready? If somebody were to come, I don't know, where would we meet somebody? At the mall. Does anybody go to the mall anymore? It's not doing very well. Would you be ready to present in the future? Maybe you've missed some times in the past. Or would you be ready tomorrow if somebody had an opportunity, if you had an opportunity to share the gospel? Have you put on the right shoes for the thing God wants you to do? Or are you just walking around in slippers all the time? Maybe that's what you're doing. Are you ready to proclaim? And if you're not ready to proclaim, then maybe you should prepare now, right? You prepare in the moments of non-combat. In the moments of non-combat is when we train and get ready so that when the moment happens, I don't have to prepare. I already have something prepared. And may I suggest maybe you write some stuff down? There's nothing wrong. It's not cheating if you write some stuff down, right? It doesn't have to be in your head. You could have it in your wallet. You could have it on your phone, right? Maybe just have a file on your phone that when the opportunity presents itself, you've got some stuff written down that you could share with somebody else. There's a lot of ways that we could prepare. Are you ready?